The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Dale Evans guest stars on the All-Star Western Theater, and a funeral train is the subject of an episode of Can You Imagine That? Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, a funeral train is the subject of Can You Imagine That? Right now, Dale Evans is the guest with Riders of the Purple Sage on the All-Star Western Theater as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
The Bakers of Weber's Bread present your All-Star Western Theater.
Drifting along, singing a song under a western moon.
From Hollywood comes your all-star western theater, starring America's great western singers, Foy Willing and the Riders of the Purple Sage. And with them as their special guest, motion picture singing cowgirl, Dale Evans. Now, the Riders of the Purple Sage.
Blazing sun all day, singing, swinging, as I travel on my way. Riding rocking, roping, branding cattle all day long, singing and a swinging to a cowboy song. Riding, roping, in the blazing sun all day,
riding in the saddle all day long, to a long and lonesome cowboy song. Riding through the burning desert sand, through the land and country where a man's a man.
And I'll go riding, roping in the blazing sun all day, singing, swinging as I travel on my way. Riding, rocking, roping, branding cattle all day long, singing and a swinging to a cowboy song. Riding, roping in the blazing sun all day.
Thank you, friends. The signs all point to the fact that we'll have a mighty fine half hour together. Dale Evans has promised to sing for us and to help us tell our story. But more than that, the presence of a pretty gal on the show always inspires Scotty, Johnny, Al, and me to do better than our best. You'll see what I mean now as we sing this favorite song of all Western fans. Al, start off Blue Prairie.
Weary day and lonely night seems to say that nothing's right. Everything is feeling blue. Here in my very soul, I feel it too. Far in the distant hills, I hear a cry. Then a silent hush, but no Prairie, won't you tell me too? Why have they spread this gloomy blanket of blue over you?
Blue Prairie, blue are the skies. Of a night wind, oh,
the trill of a night bird. Calling, every beating heart beats a rhythm that is blue, and the moon has cast a blue reflection in the dew. So the wind, while on its way, seems to cry and sigh and say, blue. Of a longing blue as you.
When the West was young, thousands of head of cattle roamed the open range. Cowpunchers were busy gents. They had to spend long, weary hours in the saddle, looking over the huge herds for which they were responsible. For the most part, their pay was small and the hours long, but they didn't mind. About all they asked was a congenial foreman and plenty of good food at the ranch house. Westerners today are pretty much the same. They're congenial and they like plenty of good food. And that's why Weber's bread is so popular among Southern Californians. Weber's is good bread. It's always well-mixed and well-baked, and it's always the same, always smooth, even textured, always distinctive in flavor. Yes, good Weber's bread always hits the spot. Buy Weber's bread the next time you go marketing. It's that good bread in the familiar blue gingham wrapper. You'll like it.
Now, folks, I want you to meet again our favorite glamour girl of the West, Miss Dale Evans. It's good to have you back in Hollywood, Dale. Though I expect folks in other parts of the country wish you could keep right on making personal appearances.
I wish I could, too, Foy. You know, I had a lot of fun playing theaters, and as soon as I can, I'm going on the road again.
Well, meanwhile, you will grace our program occasionally, I hope.
I sure will. And here's a song you asked me to sing. It's called His Hat Cost More Than Mine.
Atta girl.
I went to Nevada to have a good rest, and I met a cowboy, a son of the West. I fell for his charm and the way that he dressed, but his hat cost more than mine. His ranch had a mortgage, he told me one day. The horse had a big appetite for hay. He felt that the woman must always pay, and his hat cost more than mine. His hat was a 10-gallon Stetson, oh my, it was pretty. But they cost too much to keep him in style in the city. Oh, what a pity. Now he said we could move into town, you see, and live on my income very handsomely. He had it all planned, but it worried me, 'cause his hat cost more than mine. And his ties and his shaps and his spurs, they were pretty. But they cost too much to keep him in style in the city. Oh, what a pity. Now his shoulders were broad, he was 6'3". His boots were as gaudy as they could be. But I wore a 7 and he wore a 3, and his hat cost more than mine. Yes, his hat cost more than mine. You know, I wonder how many bonnets that character buys a year. His hat costs more than mine.
Thank you, Dale. Thanks a lot. Now, don't go away, because there's lots more for you to do before the show's over.
The Riders of the Purple Sage and a Westerner's Idea of Paradise. Cowboy's Heaven.
Oh, paint and I will be there. Tonight I'm a tired, weary cowboy. I've been in the saddle all day, searching the hills and the valleys.
looking straight up in the sky, watching the bright stars a twinkling away up there on high.
Seems sometimes maybe they see us, and maybe they understand. They may be the souls of cowpunchers who have gone to that promised land.
Well, it's time now for Foy Willing and the Riders of the Purple Sage to tell us another of their adventures in the West. This week, their story is called Heaven is a Star and features our guest, Republic Pictures' lovely leading lady, Miss Dale Evans. Poets have written verses pledging life, love, and constancy to the women of their lives. But words are only words. And when a woman tires of them, I say let her travel west. For the West is a land of action. Here, chivalry is not a honeyed phrase, a compliment. Chivalry is a thing that's done. Respect shown, comfort provided, courtesy given. Nor is it a mere whim that makes a Western man give rather than promise chivalry. No, for Western women, by their beauty and courage, have earned the consideration they receive. Thus, when those three vagabonds, the Riders of the Purple Sage, received a call for help from a girl they knew, they rode all through the night, and by dawn were almost at her side.
Hold it, boys. There she is, coming to meet us.
Sure enough. Oh, look at her ride. If my gal could see Dale ride to meet me, she'd throw a jealous fit.
Oh, if your gal could see, you wouldn't have a gal.
Why not?
Now, don't make me answer that question, Johnny. It calls hard feelings.
Boys.
Hello, Dale.
Hello, Dale. Kind of giving that horse a workout, ain't you, Dale?
And he's going to get more of the same, I'm afraid.
What's up?
I'll tell you when I get my wind back.
Dale's prettier than my gal, you know it, Al?
Oh, even Bald Barbara is, if the truth be known.
Boys, there's trouble at the Circle Bar, and I think maybe you can help. Frank Tegel has gone bad and locked himself and his little girl in the house.
Gone bad? What do you mean?
Loco. He's threatening to shoot anyone who comes near. The Rangers have the place surrounded, but they're afraid to close in on account of the little girl. They're afraid she'll get hurt.
Well, I don't know what we can do, Dale. We hardly know Tegella.
I know him, though. I've helped take care of the little girl, so we're friends. Listen, I think maybe I can get into the house, but, well, after I get there, well, I don't want to be alone with him.
We'll sure go with you, Dale, if that'll help.
Once we're inside, maybe we can talk him into being quiet long enough for the Rangers to take over. Then there's always a chance we can't, and if we can't, when we get in there and, well, you know how he is, and you know what might happen, loco as he is.
Lead the way, Dale. If you've got nerve enough to try, I guess we can go along with you.
Captain North is in charge of the Rangers here, Foy.
We're old friends.
Yes, I should say.
Then you probably know Al Sloy and Johnny Paul, too.
Sure. Hello, Al.
Hello, Johnny.
Dale explained what we're up against, I suppose.
Yeah, most of it.
Well, the situation hasn't changed. A couple of times last night we tried to slip a man in through the back, but the gal is too smart for that. The little girl's our problem. We don't want anything to happen to her.
Well, I reckon we'd better see what we can do. Try our luck.
Well, I'd keep out in the open if I were you. He might get an idea that you're not trying to put anything over.
Well, he's always trusted me. I'll take the lead.
Al, Johnny, we're starting.
We're with you.
He's there at the front window.
Call to him when we get near enough.
Yeah, I will.
Don't get too far ahead, Dale.
I want him to see me first. We'll have a better chance that way.
Well, how come the guy has to go back?
Nobody's sure. We think his wife's death has been preying on his mind. Hasn't had anyone to help look after Judy. I'd drop in every day. I'd try to follow him. He has a rifle in his hand.
Easy, then.
Mr. Tegella?
Hold it, Johnny. Al?
Yeah, sure.
Mr. Tegella?
He's raising his rifle.
No talk. Don't move.
You know me, don't you, Mr. Tegella?
What do you want?
Just to see Judy.
Why are those men with you?
They're friends of mine.
Better go back. You better go back right now.
Mr. Tegella, I've told Judy stories about one of these men. I promised I'd bring him over to see her.
Well, there's a little girl out on the porch.
Hello, Judy. I brought Foy Willing with me. Ask your dad...
Just the one man you told her about, not the other. I won't have him.
Good work.
Tell him to throw down his gun. He has to promise not to try to take me in. I'll hold you responsible if he don't keep his word. Put your hands in the air until I see whether you have any more guns.
There ain't any more.
Dale, what's the matter with everybody?
Things will soon be all right now, Judy.
Come in. All the way. Close the door.
Thanks.
You better remember your promise not to try to take me in. If you make even one move, that looks
I'll
like...
I'll keep my word, Mr. Tugela.
I'm holding Dale responsible. This is a surefire gun.
Dale.
Just a minute, dear.
You can put that gun away. We're here to help you and Judy. We're not...
I let you come with Dale because we need water. Judy and I have drunk up all the water we had, and I'm going to make you go to the well and get some more.
Why, you could have gotten it yourself. You still can.
That's what you and the Rangers are waiting for. If I go outside, you'll run off with Judy and the Rangers will shoot me.
You're mistaken.
Go on, get the water. You don't. This is a surefire gun.
Daddy, why are you so mean?
You better go for it.
All right.
I'll see what I can do for Judy while you're gone.
Put the gun down, Mr. Tugela. Don't point it at me.
He's afraid, ain't he?
Mr. Tugela, we're not here to hurt you. Neither are the Rangers. If they were, they'd have closed in long ago. Please put that gun down. Boy's our friend.
Nobody's my friend. They're all trying to get Judy, put evil spirits in her, but I won't let them. I won't let anybody, not even you.
Boy's coming back with the water.
I won't let even you put evil spirits into Judy. Remember that.
Have I ever tried to harm Judy, Mr. Tugela?
He says things like that all the time now, Dale.
Come in.
Here's the water.
You first, Judy. And then me. Drink all you want. We've got lots of water now.
All right, Daddy.
And when this is gone, he'll get more, won't you?
Put the gun down. I'll...
Because you and I'll stay here, Judy, where people can't get in to fill you with evil spirits.
Watch him fire the gun.
And we're going to keep Dale and this man here, too. They can get things for us, water and
put
food.
Put that gun down.
And if they don't stay, we'll use the gun on them. It's sure fire.
Mr. Tugela.
Like this, see?
Stop it! Stop it!
It's sure fire.
Your little girl's hit. Put that gun down. You've hit your little girl.
You better stand back.
I'll see if you can get to Judy. Mr. Tugela, look here. Come over this way. You've shot Judy. Let boy see if he can help her. You don't want her to die, do you?
We'll have to go for a doctor, Dale.
But how?
I don't know, but we'll have to. There's nothing more we can do for the little girl. She's in a bad way.
He won't let us leave.
I'll stay with him. You ride for town.
Well, it might be better if you went. Judy will be less afraid if I'm here. She knows me.
You can't stay here alone.
I have to. He's suspicious of you. I've been here so often, it'll seem more
natural. Nobody's leaving.
Roy has to go, Mr. Tugela. He's got to get a doctor for Judy. She's awfully sick.
Nobody's leaving.
Try and get out, Roy. I'll find some way of fixing things so you can bring the doctor in when you come back.
Nobody's leaving, I said.
We can go in and see Judy now, Mr. Tugela.
It was his fault Judy's hurt.
She's awfully sick. She'll want you beside her. See? There she is. Come on, please.
Sick.
Put down the gun, Mr. Tugela. Don't frighten her.
I need the gun.
Are you feeling any better, Judy?
Not much.
Here's your daddy.
I see him.
I knew you'd want us here beside you until you felt better.
She's sick.
Sit there, Mr. Tugela.
Dale, will you tell me a story?
An old one, or shall I tell you one you've never heard before?
An old one. The one about the Indian girl and her sweetheart.
All right, Judy. Once upon a time, there was an Indian girl, the most beautiful girl of all the tribe. She fell in love with a chief's son. He was very handsome and very brave, but their tribe was poor. What was worse, the tribe was at war with a neighboring tribe over a totem pole the neighboring tribe had stolen from them. The chief's son had to lead the braves, and the Indian girl was so proud of him. One night before a big battle, he walked with a girl down by the river. He pointed up to the biggest star in the sky and told her that if anything should happen to him, their love would not die. He said he'd wait on the star for her. Indians, you know, Judy, believe that heaven was on a star.
Maybe heaven is.
Well, he said he'd wait on the star and watch over her so that she could come to him. All this was just in case anything happened to him. No, Mr. Tugela, sit down.
You did it. You brought the evil spirit that made Judy sick.
Stop it. Go back.
The evil spirit will kill her. That'll be your fault.
Judy needs to sleep. You'll awaken her.
You think I don't know how to get rid of evil spirits? But I do. There's only one way. To get rid of the person who brought it.
Judy's worse. We must...
I'm going to get rid of you.
No,
you'll get better then. You let the man go.
No, no.
You're no good. I have to get rid of you.
Stop it.
This way.
No.
This way.
No.
I'm going to get...
Mr. Tugela, listen.
Judy calls.
I'll see what she wants.
Judy calls.
She wants us, Mr. Tugela. We'd better see what's the matter. Come on. What is it, Judy?
Is heaven really on a star?
I don't know, Judy. It might be.
I hope it is.
As long as you're awake, we'll sit here with you, your daddy and I. Now, we'll all be very quiet so you can go back to sleep if you can. You'll feel lots better when you wake up.
You led him into the back so we can go in, Doctor.
Oh, good.
The little girl's in the bedroom to the left.
Yes, Doctor?
Mr. Tagelli is...
It's all right. He's reconciled to the fact that you and Foy are here. He intends keeping us all prisoners.
Well, I'm afraid nothing can be done for the little girl. She's asking for you. I think you'd better go in right away.
Thank you. And when the braves of the tribe came back from the battle, they told her that the chief's son had been killed.
Hurry, Dale. Please hurry. I want to hear the last part.
Yes, Judy. Her heart was breaking, but she tried not to show it, for the tribe had been defeated, and it was winter. Her people were without food. That night, she walked outside the teepee, looked up at the brightest star. She thought she saw her sweetheart, the chief's son, there, and he seemed to be pointing out what she should do. She left the village and made her way to the enemy camp. There, she slipped into the chief's teepee and stole a totem over which the war had been fought, the totem that would bring prosperity to them again. She got safely to the edge of the camp. Then the dogs barked, awakened the tribe. The braves ran after her, shooting with their bows and arrows, but she reached her own village and gave the totem to her chief. Only then did she notice the arrows that pierced her flesh. She looked up at the star. This time her sweetheart beckoned to her. She went up to him, and Judy, if you look closer at the star, even today you'll see them both there. For that brightest star is their heaven. They'll live there happily forever.
Dale, you needn't tell any more. She's gone.
I know. But I just wanted to finish. You know, the last part, well, that was the part she loved so well. I thought maybe she could hear it, even if she was gone.
The rangers have gotten to the house. They've taken Mr. Tagella.
I hope she could hear it, Foy. Though it doesn't matter, I guess, because she's seeing it herself now. Always.
The old-time cowpuncher was a pretty independent critter. He had little use for a man who couldn't handle a horse, rope a steer, or throw a six-gun. Plenty of Eastern dudes came to the West, and most of them had little in common with the Western cowboys. However, one thing they did share in common was their love of good food. And because the West has always been noted for good food, the Easterners soon came to enjoy the plain bill of fare of the cow camps. Modern Westerners today are pretty much the same, at least in their enjoyment of plenty of good food. And that's one reason why Weber's bread is so popular among Southern Californians. Weber's bread, you know, has a distinctive flavor all its own. And because of its just right moisture content, it has a long-lasting freshness that keeps it delicious to the very last slice. Next time you visit your neighborhood market, buy a loaf of Weber's bread. The good bread in the familiar blue gingham wrapper.
Now we come to that part of the program when the riders of the Purple Sage sing a song you've chosen as one which typifies the glory and traditions of the West. This week, it's to be When the White Roses Bloom in Red River Valley, and Dale Evans joins the boys in bringing it to you.
When the white roses bloom down in Red River Valley, I'll be riding down the sunset trail to you. Neath a pale yellow moon down in Red River Valley, we will meet and plan a rainbow ranch for two. Goodbye. And I want you to know, when the white roses bloom down in Red River Valley, I'll come back and make your every dream come true.
When the white roses bloom down in Red Valley, I'll be riding down the sunset trail to you. Neath the pale yellow moon, down in Red River Valley, we will meet and plan a rainbow ranch for two.
Goodbye, my darling.
One kiss before I go. Remember, I love you, and I want you to know.
When the white roses bloom down in Red River Valley, come back and make your every dream come true.
That's about it for this time, friends. But before we go, I want to thank Dale Evans for being with us and extend an invitation for her to come again any week at all and just as often as she can make it.
Thank you, Foy.
The welcome mat is always out for you, Dale. The actors who did such a good job in helping us tell our story today were Don Bender, Byron Kane, and Stan Waxman. We'll be back again next week, folks, and hope you'll be with us. This is Foy Willing speaking for Al Sloy, Johnny Paul, Scotty Harrell, the Riders of the Purple Sage, saying so long, and good luck to all of you.
Drifting along, singing a song under a western moon.
From Hollywood, you've heard the All-Star Western Theater, a V.M. Bear production, starring America's great western singers, Foy Willing and the Riders of the Purple Sage. Dale Evans soon may be seen in The Trespasser. The script was by Ray Wilson, direction by Tom Hargis. This is Terry O'Sullivan speaking. Star Western Theater came to you from Columbia Square.
This is KNX in Los Angeles.
You are listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, starring Dale Evans with Riders of the Purple Sage on the All-Star Western Theater. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s, when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Right now, the funeral train is the subject of this episode of Can You Imagine That? On the Golden Age of Radio.
European diplomats argue over who shall ride first on a funeral train.
A great popular song hit is discovered by accident.
Can you imagine that? Well, friends, this is Lindsay McCarry back with you again to present, with the able assistance of my cohorts of the Nimble Tongue, another set of strange facts in this session of Can You Imagine That? After just a minute and a half, we'll be back, so be with us, won't you? And here's the initial try at astounding you in this broadcast of Can You Imagine That? It's seldom that we have the dubious pleasure of receiving advice from a burglar, for which, may I add, let us be duly grateful. But here's once it happened. On the last day of May, 1911, the chief of police of Jersey City received the following letter.
The police button in annoy me greatly and have prevented me from making a successful haul. So far, I have been unable to get away with anything worthwhile. In all the houses I have visited in the last 3 months, I have not gathered up enough to pay me for my energy. I am beginning to think that Jersey City is a collection of tightwads. Signed, The Slippery Kid.
The police butting in annoy me greatly. Fine thing. Well, now let's see what the next item is. To most of us today, probably the archaic purple pageantry and pomp attendant upon state affairs in some of the older kingdoms and empires of Europe seem a little out of key, as it were, with modern progress of civilization. For instance, well, Theodore Roosevelt used to tell a story which aptly illustrates this. While he was traveling abroad after his second term as President of the United States, beloved King Edward VII of Great Britain passed away. President Taft cabled T.R. and asked him to represent his nation at the funeral ceremonies. Roosevelt at that moment was in Vienna, but promptly cabled his acceptance and soon after discovered that a special train was being made up in the Austrian capital to carry the various monarchs and other emissaries and their parties from southeastern Europe to Windsor. Among these were two personages who were soon to find themselves embroiled in a question serious to them and of great pith and moment to their countries, the Tsar of Bulgaria and the Archduke Ferdinand of Austria. Just as the special train was about to pull out...
Pardon me. Are you a member of the party of His Excellency Archduke Ferdinand?
I am his special representative.
And I hold the same honored position in the entourage of His Imperial Majesty, the Tsar of Bulgaria.
Manuel, your wishes.
His Imperial Majesty desires to inform His Excellency that His Imperial Majesty, with his party, will occupy the coach immediately following the engine.
What? The Tsar of Bulgaria riding in front of a representative of the ancient house of Habsburg?
Precisely.
Well, of course. Well, one moment, please.
No.
Mynheer, you will please inform His Majesty that His Excellency, the Archduke, representing the Emperor of Austria, will occupy the coach immediately following the engine.
You insist upon this?
Positively. The order of coaches will be, first, the coach of His Excellency, the Archduke. Second, the coach of His Majesty, the Tsar of Bulgaria. Next, a dining car. After all, Mynheer, After is centuries old, Albert
Gary. Please!
My apologies.
I shall communicate your desires to His Majesty.
And so Archduke Ferdinand did occupy the first car immediately behind the engine, and as a consequence, the car into which sifted the largest quota of soot and cinders. But this international affair wasn't over yet. Not by any means. A few hours later, as the train rolled along over the picturesque countryside, the Archduke became aware of a gnawing sensation in the pit of his stomach. He was hungry. So he dispatched his emissary to the next car to contact the representative of the monarch of the Balkan state.
Manuel. Manuel, please.
You wish to speak with me?
Yes, you see, His Excellency, the Archduke, wishes to gain permission of His Majesty to pass through His Majesty's coach on His Excellency's way to the dining car.
Wait here, please. His Majesty regrets that there are so many problems of international consequence involved in His Excellency's request, and there being no precedents upon which His Majesty can possibly make a decision without the assistance of his legal and diplomatic advisers, and inasmuch as His Majesty's legal and diplomatic staffs are a great number of miles away in the capital of Bulgaria, and inasmuch as this coach must be concluded to be, for the time, titular Bulgarian property, it is deemed unwise to grant His Excellency, the Archduke of Austria, a visa to pass through His Majesty's court.
Well, you mean to say that you mean...
That unfortunately, His Excellency regretfully must wait until the train stops in order to pass around His Majesty's coach to the dining car.
Bah!
Yes, indeed. And the Archduke of Austria did wait until the train stopped at the next town before he could go around the Bulgarian coach on the station platform and into the dining car. And then, after he had finished his meal, the train was again on its way, and he had to wait in the dining car for another stop so that he could re-enter his own coach next to the engine. Can you imagine that? And we wonder whether or not in the following few years, such incidents as this might not have lost their extreme significance for Ferdinand of Habsburg, particularly on that day in 1914 when he and his wife gazed into the muzzle of a student's revolver at Sarajevo, the revolver that was to end their lives and touch off the tinder of the Great World War. You know, chance remarks have often been the inspiration for some of our most successful popular songs. I'm sure that you've heard of many of them, but I always find it interesting to trace some of these stories down to their original source. Here's one which resulted in the composition of an old-time number you all know. A number of years ago, a young actor named John F. Palmer had just completed the current theatrical season in a tour of the play The Two Orphans, starring Kate Claxton. He returned to his home in the Harlem section of New York City, maintained in his absence by his sister Pauline, to await his next call to the boards. One day, Pauline, in her usual morning routine, went to the door of John's room and, in the midst of a din created by an old-fashioned German band playing nearby, called to her brother.
John! John! Breakfast is ready. John! John, do you hear me? Breakfast! Oh, dear, that old band. John! Breakfast!
Just a moment, Pauline. Let the band play on.
All right. Let the band play on.
Subsequently, John Palmer, satisfied that he'd heard enough band music for the moment, joined his sister at breakfast. As Pauline was clearing away the breakfast dishes, she turned to her brother.
John, that remark you made a while ago.
Remark? What remark?
When you said, let the band play on.
What about it?
That's a good title for a song.
Title for a song? What are you talking about?
Yes, the band played on.
The band played on. That's not bad, sis. Not bad at all.
All right, then. Get busy.
All right, slave driver. Give me some paper and a pencil.
In a short time, John Palmer had penned the lyrics of a popular song telling the exploits of one Matt Casey, who exhibited the uncontrollable desire to waltz with a certain luxurious strawberry blonde during certain provocative moments while the band played on. Palmer concocted a melody to fit the verses and chorus, but like so many of us whose heads ring with the greatest song of all, he didn't possess the necessary education to place the musical notes on manuscript paper. But with the help of a trap drummer in the orchestra of the old Third Avenue Theater, John finally was able to present his song to a music publisher. A music publisher? I should have said many music publishers, for John Palmer made many futile journeys to publishers' offices trying to sell his song, until at last he abandoned hope of disposing of his masterpiece and turned to writing for the stage. One day, while sitting in the office of a friend, borrowing the use of a typewriter to type a play manuscript, John unconsciously hummed the chorus of his song.
Come in. Yes, sir?
My name is Ward, Charles B. Ward.
Oh, yes, Mr. Ward, of course.
I remember seeing you on the stage several times.
And your name?
John Palmer.
Oh, yes. Mr. Palmer, who was humming in here a moment ago?
I guess I was.
Oh, and what was the name of the song you were humming?
Oh, it was a little ditty I wrote some time ago. I never sold it. It was called The Band Played On.
The Band Played On. And you never sold it, eh?
No, sir.
Now, Mr. Palmer, I've recently turned to publishing music on a rather small scale. I like your song. How would you like to sell it to me?
Sell it to you?
Sure. Let me buy it from you and I'll publish it.
Yes, of course I'll sell it to you. Sure I will.
Well, good. Drop over to my office when you're finished here and we'll talk turkey.
And so, because of two elements of chance, John Palmer's chance remark to his sister and his chance humming of his song, he was able to dispose of it to Charles Ward. Ward made several changes in the melody, placing the melodic pattern on the accented notes upward instead of downward as in Palmer's original melody, and thus came to be known as the writer of the song. Yes, it's a great idea to possess tenacity of purpose, courage, ambition, and all the other attributes of normal success, but every once in a while, chance does play a part in winning a goal in the game of life.
Matt Casey formed a social club that beat the town for style and hired for a meeting place a hall. When payday came around each week, they greased the floor with wax and danced with noise and vigor at the ball. Each Saturday you'd see them dressed up in Sunday clothes. Each lad would have his sweetheart by his side. When Casey led the first grand march, they all would fall in line behind the man who was their joy and pride. For then Matt Casey would waltz with the strawberry bun, and the band played on. He'd glide across the floor with a girl he adored, and the band played on. But his brain was so loaded, it nearly exploded. The poor girl would shake with alarm. He'd marry the girl with the strawberry curls, and the band played on. Casey would waltz with the strawberry blonde, and the band played on. He'd glide across the floor with the girl he adored, and the band played on. But his brain was so loaded, nearly exploded. The poor girl would shake with alarm. He'd marry the girl with the strawberry curl, and the band played on.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another session of Can You Imagine That? This is Lindsay McCary inviting you very cordially to be back with us when we visit your station again. And until then, goodbye now.
Ask Mother, she knows. Yes, Mother knows that quality comes first in a food. That's why delicious Quaker Puffed wheat and Quaker Puffed rice are made from only the premium grains of wheat or rice. What's more, Mother likes the fact that wheat or rice shot from guns makes an easy-to-fix, economical, deluxe family breakfast with milk or cream and fruit. For added health benefits, natural grain amounts of vitamin B1, niacin, and iron are restored in Quaker Puffed wheat and Quaker Puffed rice. So for a taste-tantalizing, nourishing treat, enjoy Quaker Puffed rice or Quaker Puffed wheat.
On a Monday morning it begin to rain. Round the curve come a passenger train. On the blinds was Hobo John. He's a good old hobo, but he's dead and gone. Dead and gone. He's dead and gone. He's a good old hobo, but he's dead and gone. Jay Gould's daughter said before she died, Papa fix the blinds so the bums can't ride. If ride they must, they gotta ride the rod. Let them put their trust in the hands of God, in the hands of God, in the hands of God. Let them put their trust in the hands of God. Jay Gould's daughter said before she died, two more trains I'd like to ride. Jay Gould said, daughter, what can they be? There's the Southern Pacific and the Santa Fe. The Santa Fe and the Santa Fe. There's the Southern Pacific and the Santa Fe. Jay Gould's daughter said before she died, there's two more drinks I'd like to try. Jay Gould said, daughter, what can they be? A glass of water and a cup of tea. Cup of tea and a cup of tea. There's a glass of water and a cup of tea. Charlie Snyder was a good engineer. Told his firemen not to fear. Said, pour on your water, boys, shovel on your coal. Stick your head out the window, see the driver's roll. See the driver's roll. See the driver's roll. Stick your head out the window, see the driver's roll. See the driver's roll. See the driver's roll. Stick your head out the window, see the driver's roll.
It's been so long, darling, since I had to go away. It's been so long, darling, and I'll never forget that day. Although you never mentioned it, you cried that whole day long. It's been so long, darling, but now I'm coming home. Been so long, darling, since I gazed into your eyes. It's been so long, darling, do you really realize that just the thought of seeing you, it scares me through and through. It's been so long, darling, since I had a kiss from you. Oh, do it for you, Jimmy. It's been so long, darling, but it won't be long now. It's been so long, darling, but I've kept every vow. I pray that you'll be waiting as you did in days gone by. It's been so long, darling, please don't blame me if I cry. It's been so long, darling, since I gazed into your eyes. It's been so long, darling, do you really realize that just the thought of seeing you, it scares me through and through. It's been so long, darling, since I had a kiss from you.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY. Music from 1945, Ernest Tubb, and It's Been So Long, Darlin'. And from 1957, Pete Seeger with Jay Gould's Daughter. We also heard an episode of Can You Imagine That, hosted by Lindsay McCary. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.